You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 25 May, day 60 of lockdown, 1 week till level 3. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're going to be talking markets with Mateto Titolori, being business analysis at RMB. I want to know about oil strength. I want to know about ZAR strength. I want to know about inflation out this week. We're going to be talking to Santova Global Supply Chains and Tourism Business Council of South Africa. How does the industry survive as it waits to be allowed to reopen? Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb, Afrimat eyes acquisitions. Business Day, producer inflation likely to have slowed due to falling oil prices. 3.5% expected when it's released on Thursday. Morning markets, US green on Friday, S&P up 0.25%, Nasdaq 0.5%. Asia mixed, but Sydney and Tokyo are both up around 1.5%. Commodities all a little red, the exception being oil edging higher, and the Rand 17.58.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mateto Titolori. He's a business analyst at RMB. Mateto, morning. Thanks for your time. We've seen the Rand strengthening after in fact, a little bit ahead of the rate announcement from the governor last week. Still over this weekend, now trading sort of 17.50 and change. Well off from where it started the year at 14 to the US dollar, but certainly strengthening. Are you looking at RMB for perhaps more strength still going forward from our currency?
Good morning, Simon. Hope you're well. Happy Monday. And I think it's welcome to the start of another week. As we actually say that, obviously in financial markets, we've always said that sun in May and go away. And you know, the funny thing is, 8 out of the past 10 Mays, we've seen the Rand weaken. And this year, it's actually the opposite. As you say, I mean, we're touching 17.58, call it this morning. But I suppose, look, from a general and broader perspective, emerging markets, stocks and currencies obviously gained last week. I think there's quite a lot of optimism towards the coronavirus vaccine being developed and obviously more nations rolling back their lockdowns, as you've seen. Obviously, with us going into level 3 from the 1st of June, I think that's also going to be quite interesting. I think something like 8 million people will be going back to work.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing that obviously is going to be slightly hindering us with regard to the geopolitical tension is obviously what's happening between the U.S. and China, because it looks like tensions there are escalating, you know, obviously with Donald Trump obviously alluding to the fact that he may delist some of the Chinese companies from the American Stock Exchange. But I suppose also the key thing that we will be watching for is obviously what gets said by the Chinese National People's Congress and continues throughout this week.
Now, that's a great point. I mean, I had China on my list here. We forget that the big story we came into the year with was, you know, concerns around war with Iran and the ongoing conflict, trade wars between the U.S. and China. That's what we thought was going to dominate the first half of the year, overtaken by global pandemics, but still very real. You mentioned the risk of delisting Chinese companies off U.S. exchanges. We've still got the trade wars. We've still got now threats around new security laws coming into effect in Hong Kong, kind of again from that council and kind of using perhaps the pandemic and the shutdown in Hong Kong as an opportunity. But those are our two largest economies, the US and China, essentially low-level economic war. That can't be good, especially during a pandemic.
You're very much right, Simon. I think, you know, as you said, I mean, when we got into 2020, you know, besides the trade tension between the US and China, we also knew from a local fund that we're expecting Moody's to give us a rating downgrade, et cetera, ESCOM. No one really saw the black swan or the unknown risk that is the coronavirus. You know, I mean, obviously we've seen global economies being in lockdown. But the quite interesting thing, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, the mass thing is we see quite a few of, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, the likes of Moderna, the U.S. biotechnological company, saying, you know, it showed signs that it can create an immune system response to fend off the coronavirus. We've also seen, you know, a leading Chinese vaccine developer, CanSino Biologics, also signing a deal to take and separate, sell a separate Canadian vaccine, you know, out there. So it looks like there is quite a lot that's happening. But I think if you just look at this week, obviously, I think if anything, markets will be looking to see what Jerome Powell and Christine Lagarde have got to say, especially given the amount of fiscal stimulus that the U.S. has obviously pumped into the market. But obviously, the other thing that's been also quite interesting to note is obviously China has said they're going to be abandoning, you know, looking at growth, but more creating jobs. Mm-hmm. I think given the coronavirus and the pandemic that has seen number of job losses, I mean, we've seen the U.S. reporting astronomical figures of job losses. So I think that's also going to be quite interesting to see how, you know, the central bank and obviously the political figures obviously try and stimulate the economy as the lockdown eases globally.
Last question before I let you go. We've got a local CPI coming out on Thursday. I'm hearing a lot of talk around perhaps 3.5%, which is monsterly low, just above our range of 3-6%. What's your take expectation for Thursday's inflation number?
Look, I think obviously inflation will be slightly low. I think the demand isn't there, but also we've seen, you know, oil prices come off quite significantly. I mean, as I'm filling up going to work, I'm quite happy with petrol prices at 12 rand a litre. And I suppose, you know, that's also going to filter through into the inflation basket. And that's why you're not going to see so much inflation from both the supplier and demand perspective. I think that's what's going to obviously drive inflation lower. But I suppose the other thing is obviously, as Mr. Chakanyahu was speaking yesterday on a webinar that I was listening to, he did obviously say that inflation is likely to surprise to the downside. So I think if anything, you know, the SARB, you know, the policy measures, as they've said, that obviously the policy measures, they have not been felt yet due to the lockdown. But the nice thing is that, you know, the monetary policy buffers, you know, were there, especially when the coronavirus started. So I think the researcher and team have still got a bit of room. I mean, obviously, we're going to see how the pandemic plays itself out locally, especially going into the next 8 weeks before the next MPC meeting. I mean, obviously, a lot of people were expecting 100 basis point cut last week Thursday already. But I suppose what they're trying to do is also keep some of their powder dry, especially if the situation gets worse, then potentially we could see another 50 basis point cut in July. So I think inflation will be quite interesting this month and next month, given the fact that obviously we've seen the lockdown locally, you know, and then obviously we'll see what the research and team have got to say in July.
That's a good point. The SARB gave us only 0.5%. That gives us a little more space. That's Mateta Tulari. He's a business analyst, RMB. So appreciate your time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Glenn Gerber, his CEO, Santova. They had year-end results to February. Those were Tuesday last week. We'll touch on those. I want to talk global supply chains. Glenn, appreciate your time. Your last set of results to year-end Feb showing very much you're a global logistics company. You sort of from just a South African logistics company, I suppose, non-asset-based company at that. How much of the global growth has been sort of acquisition, organic growth offshore versus a South African economy that's been under pressure for a number of years now?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, as you would have gathered from the results, we were significantly down in South Africa, but offshore we had strong growth coming through. The UK was probably up 116%, and Europe was up 29%, and South Africa down 45%. So in South Africa, it was an exceptionally tough year, but as you've mentioned, with the global offices, we well diversified, and obviously pulled us through to show 6.4% growth on the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, so strong numbers coming out there, and you're very much now global. Those global supply chains, typically they flow like absolute clockwork and it operates. But under lockdown from sort of March in different parts of the world, how's that process been where different territories are at one level, others at a different level, or have goods largely been able to flow through different ports of entry and exit?
So, I mean, it's quite complicated. There are a lot of factors coming into play insofar as the impact on global supply chains. I think the extent of the impact can be attributed to probably five different areas. I mean, the first is whether you're asset-based or not. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're pretty much non-asset-based and a very good cost structure, you're going to be less impacted on. The other big one is the industry in which you're exposed. So if you're in apparel, alcohol, airlines, or tourism, you've obviously got a challenge. And the third one is trade lanes. If one looks at your Southeast Asia or Asia Pacific, should I say, they're almost back to normal. And secondly, there's a lot of innovation and a lot of supply coming out of those regions for PPE and also commodities related to that industry. And then most importantly, I think if you look at South Africa's cash flow, you know, we came into the COVID lockdown with a back of a recession, which obviously makes it a lot tougher. But if you don't have the cash flow, sufficient cash flows or reserves, you do have a challenge. And particularly with some of the larger corporates who don't have access to assistance from government.
Ah, fair point. And government's helping, but there are limits to that level of help. You've mentioned it, I've mentioned it, the benefit of listeners. You're non-asset. What we mean by that is you physically don't own trucks, boats, aeroplanes and the like. You're more just sort of smart software and connecting the different parts of that supply chain.
To be honest, we focus on information within that supply chain, KPIs. We focus on the more, IP side of it. And that's why we look at controlling supply chain from source to final point of consumption. And we don't have that fixed asset base, so to speak. A lot of the larger players or icons of the industry have significant properties, significant vehicles and trucking, and capital equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't fall into that category. So our structure is pretty variable, and it allows us, and we're a small organization, so it does allow us to be flexible and to make changes relatively quickly.
You are a small organization, Durban-based. Whenever I drive down what's now Mahatma Gandhi Drive, I see your offices on the side there. Small, but very much a global presence. You've moved fairly swiftly into Europe, into bits of Asia, and got that global footprint solidly in place.
It's taken some 10 years, but we're 80% offshore now. So, yes, the offshore is the big driver. It's our focus. And then, obviously, return on capital is more based offshore as opposed to in South Africa itself. And I think South Africa is a unique market for the supply chain logistics sector. And what people don't realize, it's fairly unique in the sense that a lot of our business is driven by credit underwriters.
Mm-hmm.
So loans advance funding to importers on the back of credit underwriters, insurance of the debtors book. So in a market like this, in the ratings of South Africa, the credit underwriters start reducing the extent to which they underwrite a lot of the debtors. They won't be able to raise capital in South Africa, which will have a massive impact on importers. Because in South Africa, what is unique is that the 3PL or logistics market actually acts as an agent on behalf of SARS, collecting VAT and duties. So that is something we're looking at, and it will have a massive impact on importers in South Africa, whereas globally that is not necessarily the case. The importers deal directly with the local tax authorities, and so far the collection and payment of VAT and duties is concerned. So that is a concern within South Africa.
We'll leave that there. That's Glenn Gober. He's CEO Centova, talking supply chains, talking logistics, talking year-end Feb results.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Tourism Business Council of South Africa CEO Shifiwe Shivangwa. Morning, thanks for your time. Level 3 moving to next week, as announced by our president. Tourism and hospitality not opening under Level 3. What level are you expecting your industry to start opening? Is it 2? Is it perhaps as far away as Level 1?
Thank you for having me, and good morning to your listeners. I think the president has announced last night, you know, there has been a movement in terms of business travel, which is critical within South Africa and within our industry. So the fact that business travel is going to be allowed to travel to hotel, to use hotels, even if there's limited domestic air travel, it's a step in the right direction, and we really are appreciative of that. And I think that it's a positive move. You know, of course, leisure travel, it's still not allowed in terms of, you know, recreational travel, as they put it. So those are the kind of things that, like the president said, he has received our proposal. He is considering it, but at least there is some movement in terms of business travel.
Yeah, I suppose, and business travel. I mean, I know parts of the industry, and I'm thinking City Lodge, you know, they predominantly get from business travel. Now, we're not going to get back to sort of February levels in a hurry. We're going to see some sort of activity there. The Tourism Business Council of South Africa published a detailed document last week on how the industry manages the pandemic as it starts to reopen. Certainly lots of information in there, but still an industry that even as it reopens is going to find it tough in terms of there'll be income areas which won't be operating. There will be extra costs incurred and lowered capacity in order to manage social distancing and the like during a lockdown, regardless at what stage we are.
No, absolutely. We're going to have issues around demand, because we can open. You know, we can say everything is open tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's up to the people if they want to travel and they feel comfortable traveling. So one of the things that I've always been saying is that we need to travel must start for tourism to happen. So in essence, people must feel confident to travel. They must feel confident that we're doing something about health and safety. And that's why we published the document, although it's still draft and it's going to be finalized hopefully by this week. It shows how serious we are in terms of mitigating the spread of the virus. And it shows the commitment of the industry in sort of de-risking our sector and ensuring that we return to some level of operation. So those protocols are going to go a long way in returning, to some level. You will see that, restaurants, for example, from what I heard last night, it looks or appear as if, now drive-thrus are going to be allowed or takeaways are going to be allowed. So it's a step in the right direction. I think we're moving towards the right direction. We will intensify our efforts to de-risk the sector, ensure that we have protocols, and that we will play a role in mitigating the spread of the virus. So protocols are going to be important, and you've seen that every sector, has put together their own protocols to ensure that they can operate. And it's the same with the tourism industry. If you go back to 9/11, when everyone was saying, travel is not safe.
Mm-hmm.
People had to see at the airport, they had to see that there's, scanners. People are getting scanned, they're getting searched, bags are being searched, and so forth and so on. Then they gain confidence that it is safe to travel. So we need to do the same thing within our sector. We need to show that we are serious about, hygiene. In fact, we have been serious about hygiene because we're a very sanitized industry. We clean, we do all the simple stuff. But what we need to do is to take it a step further, to make sure that, what we're doing now is more than just the cleaning of the room, but it's making sure that the room is free of virus or germs and so forth and so on. So that is something that we will demonstrate, and giving us this opportunity to operate for business gives us, an opportunity to show what we can do as a sector, to show how we can de-risk the sector. And hopefully, when the country is opening up slowly, we will be ready, to take in, customers. But demand is going to be a problem. There's no international travel, so that's still suppresses demand. Also, domestic travel, people don't have money, and companies don't have money. So there is still going to be issues around demand, and we are well aware of that, and something that we're going to have to work hard on that. We're going to be hit for a long time, and we understand that.
Yeah, that's a fair point, and I love your point around it's about the visual process. I mean, as you say, the industry's always been cleaning. Of course they have. I've never gone into a dirty hotel room or restaurant in my life, but it now needs to become that visual component. It needs to be so we can see it, so we can get that confidence. Quickly, before we let you go, the industry, obviously a giant employer in South Africa. Is there as much support? I know the government has got some package. The president announced a half a trillion. Is much of that flowing into the industry? Are the smaller, particularly parts of the industry, getting government support?
Absolutely. There is a support that came from the Department of Tourism in a form of 200 million rand. I know it's been part of ongoing litigation in terms of how it's distributed. But I think it's a welcome support, for SMEs within our sector. If we can get more of those kinds of support, it will be very helpful. And it is something that we've been discussing with the Minister of Tourism to say, how do we help also the medium and independent companies, as well as the large companies? Large companies have a turnover of more than 300 million. It makes them you know, they fall outside of the threshold of these government guaranteed loans. So it is something that, you know, we've been talking to the minister and the department to say, how do we help the big companies? They employ a lot of people. And also we've been saying that perhaps, you know, the TS program with UIF, when it comes to the tourism sector, it needs to be expanded for more months, so because we're not going to recover anytime soon because of the issues of demand. So we have raised these issues with the minister, and, you know, we know that she's been working hard, you know, around the clock to ensure that we get some, you know, positive results on this matter. So we will wait, you know, for the minister to tell us, you know, what it's going to look like, if it's there, and if it's not there, what are the alternatives that we can go for. But support for the sector is quite critical.
Yeah, and I like that idea. Perhaps some sectors, such as yours, such as tourism, actually needs more extended for UIF because simply going to be opening a lot later. Shafiwe Shivangwa, CEO of Tourism Business Council of South Africa, appreciate your time this morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. Moneyweb.co.za or the Moneyweb app. Podcast in your favorite podcast catcher, including Spotify, Google, Apple, from 7 a.m. My thanks to our guests and my thanks to Cordora and Eddie for helping with the show. My name is Simon Brown. This is Moneyweb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.